Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Andy J Podcast.
Hi there, welcome to the Andy J Podcast. I hope you're having a good week. Well, we have some incredible conversations for you today. I mean, incredible conversations for you today. Conversations that blew my mind. Let me tell you who's on the show today. Have you seen The Umbrella Academy on Netflix? We have not one, but two of the stars of that hit show, and what a show it is. The brilliant Tom Hopper, who's been in so many other things, and his compadre, the magnificent Robert Sheehan, who has also been in everything under the sun. I mean, two colossal actors on top of their game, and they both give up their time today to chat to me, and wow, they're just really good guys. Of course, we were there to talk about The Umbrella Academy, but you will hear in this chat that becomes kind of very, very, well, it kind of left to the back of the room, really. We hardly touch on it. They're just such interesting, such engaging guys. Really great conversations with them. I absolutely loved it. Then, oh, Emmett Scanlon, another great actor. Now, Emmett was such a good guy. He has just become a new dad again. And by new, I mean there's so many years difference between his eldest and his newborn baby. So he's just kind of going through that experience of love/utter exhaustion for this tiny, tiny little human being that he and his missus have created. And so it was just so much fun. And he's been absolutely joyful subsequently, sent me so many funny little chats and bits and pieces on WhatsApp. I really liked Emmett. I thought he was a top, top man. And I think the conversation reflects that. I hope you enjoy it. And then I have a conversation with a young lady who I just thought was absolutely phenomenal. I'm a fan of her music anyway, but I didn't know much about her story. I didn't know much about what she carried with her in terms of her life baggage, and it is colossal. And the way she describes it, the way she talks about her journey today, the way she is so open and honest and raw with what she has lived through and with is unbelievable and was humbling and fascinating. And I really hope that when you hear this, it helps if you are going through a rough time, or you can share it with someone just so that they can hear that you're not alone when times are tough. Janet Devlin is a truly sensational young lady, and I can say that because I'm an old man, right? So I can call, you know, someone in their early 20s young lady, because I'm in my 40s, so I'm a probably old dude. But she was incredible. I couldn't thank her enough for her honesty, her openness, for sharing her stories and how she survived and how she stepped up and got through it. I hope you feel enlightened and rewarded for hearing it, and entertained, of course, by all the other chats we have around with the guests as well. So I'll stop chatting now and dive straight in with today's podcast.
The Andy J Podcast.
Hey there, welcome to Driven, the show that chats to celebrities and achievers about what drives them. This week, joining the conversation, we have a litany of wonderful celebrities for you. We have singing sensation Janet Devlin. I should call her singer-songwriter, actually. She's a very, very talented young lady. We have an acting heartthrob on the show for you today. Mr. Emmett Scanlon joins the conversation. You may know him from a number of different things. Hollyoaks is where he began, but he moved on to Guardians of the Galaxy, amongst others. Yeah, very cool. The ultimate salvage hunter, the legend that is Mr. Drew Pritchard. We'll be chatting to him later on, towards the end of the show. And we have two other stars for you. More on them in a moment. Should we do this? This is Driven on Talk Radio. I'm Andy J.
Driven with Andy J on Talk Radio, in association with Paramex Digital. You dream it, we bring it to life. Find out more at drivenchat.com.
So before all that, I have come across a new binge for you. Have you run out of things to watch on Netflix or Prime recently? Because we, you know, there's not enough new shows out there, are there? Well, that's all about to change as the second series of Umbrella Academy has landed on Netflix. Now, I was lucky enough to catch up with two of the poster boys for the show recently, Robert Sheehan and Tom Hopper. They're big stars in their own right, but they're also massive members of the Umbrella Academy crew. And we ended up having a really deep chat reflecting on life, which I think you're going to enjoy. So to start with, I asked them about the skills they've learnt on the show, starting with Tom.
The biggest one for me would have been from season one when Steve Blackman told me I was going to do this partner dance with Alison. I mean, I've never done a partner dance in my life. So when I saw that, well, first and foremost, I thought I didn't sign up for that. Do you know what I mean? It's like when I first took on the show, I had no idea that in season one, I'd end up doing a partner ballroom style dance. But it actually ended up being my favorite thing I did that year, I think. It was such a great experience and I got to learn something new. You know, I got to learn how to do something. That's what I love doing about our job, really, is that you get opportunities, particularly on this show, you get opportunities to do things and learn how to do things that you just otherwise wouldn't have got opportunities to do. That experience allowed me to kind of go, wow, that's what it's like to do a part of that. And it tell you what, that is something somewhat of a superpower, I think, to learning how to do that and do that well. It's so difficult. I had such a newfound respect for dancers and ballroom dancers and stuff when I did that, because it is so difficult. It's so hard. The way you have to hold yourself, the way, you know, just tiny little movements with your feet that you wouldn't notice when you're watching partner dancing. But yeah, that was definitely the biggest challenge for me so far out of the whole show. I think that was probably the biggest challenge out over the two seasons, actually.
I'm sensing from that, Tom, that you're not going to answer the call for Strictly Come Dancing then.
It better never come. If my agent gives me that call, I'll tell them to go running.
It's a show. It's a cracking show. Rob, tuck in, my friend.
I don't know. One that just sort of keeps coming up in the memory is kissing a man tenderly. Oh, that was quite daunting. That's something.
Is that what it says in the script, though? Does it say kissing tenderly? I mean, does it give you specifics as to how you have to kiss?
No, I've added the adverb.
It actually said aggressively, but he wasn't into that.
Well, I mean, you boys, you have been rolled out as the kind of the bromance of the acting community for Umbrella Academy. I've seen the pair of you do quite a lot together. Did you guys kind of strike up a great friendship on set? Because you're not in loads of scenes together, are you?
No, just the group stuff, really, Tom, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yes, particularly this season. First season, we had some great moments. But yeah, we've become very good friends, almost like brothers off set, really. And me and Rob, you know, in a lot of ways share the same views about the world and what's wrong with it, what could be better about it. We started this podcast, The Earth Locker, and it's all about us trying to, you know, expose the public to some of the world's experts in things that they might not know about. You know, there's some amazing things happening in the world to help people, and it's not exposed in the news or in the general media, you know, and we're getting hold of these people, and we're very fortunate as actors that we do get exposed to these kind of people, and we're letting people know about it.
Food, you know, it's kind of whirled off from food into nutrition, relationship, people in their bodies, and it also whirled off in a sort of a spiritual direction.
How people can take control of their own lives, really, by making certain choices, isn't it?
Well, it's really rewarding because you guys have an audience, you know, that you both know. I'm not going to kind of, you know, blow smoke up your bums. The fact is, you have a reach. You know this. You know, you have an audience. You've both got a phenomenal body of work. You're in this terrific new show now, but we all know that you've got all sorts of amazing things lined up as well. And clearly, you know, you guys are at one with yourselves. You've been kind of learning about what's right, putting into your body and your mind and your spirit and so on and so forth. And you could just kind of go, okay, I got this now. I'm going to live a great life. I'm going to keep doing great things in my career and you know, let my body be as kind of fantastic as it can be. But instead, you're choosing to take time out of your own schedules to go, right, let's give some of this back.
You know, it's also very enjoyable to creatively control something and have a means of satisfying that creative and curious urge. A question might arise and you go, ooh, this would be a good podcast. Mm. You
know, yeah.
You just get someone on to try to answer that question or that question. And it's just that, it's just really that, you know, it's almost like a sort of literary and debating society, except for the people who are coming on are people who are geniuses and experts.
Is the whole thing being done by the pair of you? I mean, as in, are you making the calls on the guests as well? Or have you got like some assistants that you can say, listen, we'd really love to find someone who happens to know about whatever it might be?
It's a bit of both, really, Andy. Yeah, I mean, we obviously have the people that we want to get on, and we're obviously the creators of the show, along with our co-host, Byron Knight. We want to keep hold of the creative control, because it's the reason why we started it, was because we thought, oh, imagine if we could talk to someone like this, or talk to someone from a company who's doing this, or, you know, we've both had experiences in our lives that have expanded our horizons and our health and improved our health, and we want to expose the masses to those, because it's like healthcare, you know, healthcare, nutrition, all these things. A lot of people just don't know about what's available to them. And even if we can affect, you know, 1% of the people that come across our podcast and say, oh, actually, I might try that, and they can become happier, healthier people for it, then we've won. That's what it's all about, you know, trying to help people that might be feeling a little bit lost. We're saying, here's what we've done. Give it a try, you know, and if it works for them, then amazing.
Having a laugh, I think, hopefully.
Yeah.
Because there's three of us who are the hosts. To sort of break down the presupposed questions and answers template, you know, Andy, like, it's more of a just a bit of a convivial lateral chat, you know, not unlike here today. So people aren't coming on and spouting their mission statement from A to B. We're disrupting them with methodical madness, you know what I mean?
Yeah, we're questioning the status quo a lot.
But if you're doing that whilst having a laugh as well, then that sounds terrific, because a lot of these, I appreciate self-help is the wrong term for this, but a lot of these ones where people kind of turn to a podcast or a book or an app or whatever to help them relax or sleep better or eat the right things or whatever, they get a bit worthy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, laughter is the best medicine, Andy, right? Laughter. And so if you can learn a little bit of something and on the way and laugh, then that's the way I think information goes in, you know, by chatting and laughing and entertaining yourself while doing it.
You know, what is it that gets you up in the morning? What, you know, you guys as performers, you go out on a limb, you know, you take chances, you inhabit other characters, other personas, but ultimately, you know, you have to strip yourselves down to show that. So it takes a certain strength of character to have that resilience and that ability and that kind of sort of skill set to be able to go, right, this is what I'm doing today. And some of the roles that you guys have both played in obviously Umbrella Academy and the rest of your work, because I'm familiar with both of what you've done, it does require taking risks. So what drives you? What is it?
Well, I was lucky to have very, very positive human beings growing up in my life, you know, my mother and my father. My mother is someone who taught me, it's not the information that comes to you, it's what you do with it. But ultimately, do you let it destroy your life, or do you gain dominion over the pain that something external can cause in you and be sort of above it if you can, you know? And I've just had people who I think are good spiritually, or in other words, good emotional intelligence, people who don't let stuff fold them over too easy. Because, yeah, so you know, I think probably that bred some strength of character in me. I like myself, you know, so I want to see myself do all right and do well. And sometimes if I see a standard of acting, or if I see some, you know, I go, you know, I could probably do it better than that. And I've said that to myself.
What a thoughtful and really very inspiring answer, Rob. Thank you for that.
Thanks, man.
I really appreciate that. Tom, no pressure, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, like Rob, you know, I had great role models growing up. I mean, my mum was a single parent growing up. So she always said, you know, you can be anything you want to be. I grew up in a miners town called Colville in Leicestershire. And there was, you know, there's not a huge amount there, to be honest. And it was the idea of kind of going on to bigger things outside of there was never a huge prospect, really. It always felt a bit untouchable. I mean, even London, going to London was like, oh my God, London. What I think was instilled in me very early on was that anything was possible. If you put your mind to it, if you want something, it's possible. And you just have to sort of take the journey to get there. You have to put steps in place and you have to take them. You know, doors of opportunity will open up for you, and you have to, it's your decision whether you walk through those doors or not. But one of the big things I always say is it's all about enjoying the journey, because you don't know what life's going to throw at you, right? And as Rob says, you know, there's things that will come and there's things that will be hard, but it's your choice ultimately how you deal with those things. You know, you can either spin them and turn them into a positive, or you can take them and turn them into a negative and let it bring you down. I do believe, and as an actor, everything happens for a reason, because if you get down about every role you didn't get, or, you know, roles that you thought were yours and they don't go your way, and you think, oh, I was supposed to do that role, that's when it's a downward spiral. You've got to take everyone that you don't get as a positive to what could be around the corner. What is the reason? I look back now and I see the things that I didn't get and go, oh man, if I had done that job,
yeah, me too,
I would never have got this job or that job. But ultimately, like, what I'm saying is I love embracing the journey. So that it allows me to never get down about stuff, because I'm thinking, well, it's happened for a reason, and the reason will come good at some point, and I'll look back. Now, I've had enough experience now to go, well, when you look back, you go, that happened for that reason. And, you know, now I've got children. To answer the kind of the top of the question, what drives me is now my future journey for myself and my children and my family, my wife, you know, where we're going with our life, and where the things that I'm doing for my children will take me. And ultimately, that's what I go to work for. It's what I, you know, is to provide for them and their future. So enjoying the journey with them now is a whole new chapter.
Driven with Andy J.
My thanks to Tom Hopper and Robert Sheehan. And you can see season 2 of Umbrella Academy on Netflix now. So coming up after the break, I'm catching up with X Factor's Janet Devlin to find out about her new music and what life's been like since getting to the quarterfinal of the show 9 years ago. This is Driven on Talk Radio. Welcome back to Driven here on Talk Radio, powered by Paramex Digital, proud creators of DrivenChat.com. I'm Andy J, and joining me right now, I'm going to use the word firecracker, because frankly, I can see her on the screen right now and she's looking absolutely fantastic. Wonderful singer. It is the glorious Janet Devlin. She's a new album out now called Confessional. Janet, how are you doing? Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm doing good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, you know, alive and kicking. I hope you don't mind the firecracker reference, because if anybody is not aware of you, you have the most incredible, huge, flaming hair that really stands out and looks amazing.
Well, it comes from a bottle, so I'll send my regards to my hairdresser.
Now, Janet, let's talk about your journey and where you've come from. You've had you're 25 years old. Your career has spanned nearly a decade already, because, of course, you came to prominence. And I don't know how much you like talking about the X Factor, but that's the beginning of your journey as far as we, the public, are concerned. 16 years old, walking out in front of Gary Barlow and co.
Oh, God, it makes me feel old. It's like 10 years of doing something. Do you know what I mean? It's crazy. But no, I don't mind talking about it, because it was good. Like, it was what it was. It was a really good experience for me. It taught me a lot. It taught me that, like, I'm less likely to self-implode if I've got a goal, especially if it's music-orientated. It's only just weird sometimes, because it was only, like, maximum 8 months of your life, but it's, like, the thing that you're, like, most known for, you know? It's kind of like having an English class, like, years and years ago, and that's, like, the only thing you're known for was that 1 year in English literature, and you're like...
Mind you, at 16, 8 months is a pretty massive chunk of time, isn't it? I mean, that must have felt like, wow, this is real, and it's happening, and... OMG.
Yeah, but it was like the actual TV, so like the live shows is where things really get serious, and that's only about 3 months of your life. Felt like forever, though, I won't lie. Yeah, it definitely did. It was a long time for me, but like, it was good. It taught me hard work, like getting up at stupid o'clock in the morning and getting to bed at stupid o'clock in the morning, you know? So I appreciated that little baptism of fire to the industry.
Yeah. Well, I mean, from what I can remember, and like you've said, it's a decade ago, so slightly hazy memories, but from what I can remember, two key things stood out in terms of the public meeting you. The first one was your phenomenal voice, and it's just joyful that you are still singing. The new album, I listened to it on the way here this morning. It's absolutely glorious. You know, you've got a heck of a pair of pipes on you. Love your vocal. And the other thing, of course, and this is probably less exciting for you, is you were kind of wrongly or rightly labelled as the shy one. You know, you got this tag because you came out, you're nervous, you're anxious, and that's followed you around a bit, hasn't it?
Yeah, it definitely did. And for years, it was true. Like, I was shy, but not for the cute, sweet reasons I think that everybody thought I was shy. I was shy because I wasn't always, but then whenever I suffered from anorexia at about, like, 15, and depression hit me like a slap in the face when I turned like 12 years old, because I was already self-harming by 12.
Oh, wow.
So I was just very sad. And I didn't believe in myself. I always had that, like, why would anyone want to talk to me? Why would anyone want to hear my opinion? Like, I don't matter, all that kind of stuff. And then when I started to, like, develop confidence and actually really work hard on myself and obviously therapy, all those things, I found then people were like, oh, I miss the old you. And I'm like, I'm so sorry, but that's just, like, not going to happen. I'm not going to, like, live in this painful existence of self-hatred just because you think it's cute. Because it hurt. Panic attack? No fun, my guy. Like, I feel so much better now. And if it means it hurts the feelings of, like, a handful of people online, then, like, that's none of my business. Like,
too right. People online, ignore them. You'll never meet them. It really doesn't matter. But so you're talking about how, you know, at 12, you were having this kind of sadness, this sorrow. And I mean, you have really battled with demons for a long time, haven't you? I mean, just if you're happy to talk us through it, you know, firstly, I'm working on the assumption that you're in quite a good place right now. Is that right?
Yeah, oh my God, absolutely. I'm in a very, very good place now. Like, I had therapy yesterday. My therapist is like, look at you and all your coping mechanisms. I'm like, yeah, dude. No, I'm in the best part. Like, I'm in a really good place in my life. And I feel really blessed that I have so much self-knowledge for 25. Like, I feel like I know how to handle myself now as somebody who has a laundry list of mental health issues. Like, That is what it is. I can't change that, but I can change my attitude towards it and how I deal with my daily life. And I feel like I'm doing good there. But my past definitely was not so good, Jeff. I started self-harming by 12. Like, I always had a negative voice in my head. That was just a given. Like, I just didn't like myself. And then I suppose being picked on in school didn't really help or anything. And then I had such low self-esteem by 15 that I thought that I'm no good at anything, so I'm not the best at anything, so I may as well be the skinniest, just as some form of, like, achievement. So I was, like, 14, 15, and then I got better, and then when I started doing TV, I made sure that I was a healthy weight because I didn't want to be somebody's role model for self-destruction. Like, I hated this notion that girls would look at me and go, oh, she can get away with being so skinny, why can't I? Because that was definitely the mentality that I had. So I'd gotten over those, like, as much as I could. They came back to bite me later on in my life and things. But again, I worked through it and I got out the other end. But, like, there was a lot of stuff. Like, there was a sexual assault that happened when I was 15. There was fraud. I got, like, basically six figures taken away from me. So I woke up at 18, bankrupt, which was great. And then I hit a slippery slope of drinking too much, so I was an alcoholic officially, and then I also turned to benzodiazepines, which are sleeping medication, which I abused for a good 7 years. Eventually, I just was like, hey, how about we take all this energy that we've put into hating ourselves, fun concept, we use that to love ourselves. And obviously that's terrifying for somebody who's only known the negative voice in their head, and it took years, it really did, but, like, I'm now that annoyingly optimistic person that when a bad thing happens, I'm like, oh, well, you know, maybe that's the universe's way of, like, doing this or that. And it's annoying to a lot of people, but it is, like, my coping mechanism is just, like, looking on the bright side at all times, no matter what.
Well, good. I'm very glad to hear you have the coping mechanism in place, because it sounds like, you know, you've just listed, you know, a litany of issues that someone so young should never have to face. But of course, so many youngsters and so many adults go through all these horrible things. But, you know, I don't want to just kind of revisit them as little bullet points, because these are huge moments in your life that have had massive, massive impact. You've referenced sexual assault. You've referenced, you know, being an alcoholic. You've talked about losing a colossal amount of money. And of course, you've obviously been thrown into the public eye very, very quickly, unprepared for that, having had horrible experiences in your childhood with schools and bullies and this inner voice that you talk about. And it's just, you know, when you see that journey, it's remarkable that you are now, and glorious to see, smiling on the other side and bright and positive and effervescent and ready for it. But of course, you know, this is not to just kind of skate through the mountains and mountains of understandably incredibly dark times that you've obviously had to face.
Yeah, no, it was... it was a lot, it was hard, and I just can't believe that I put myself through so much pain all the time. I thought to exist was pain, and I thought to make art, you had to suffer. And that's not true. You don't have to suffer to make art at all. And I think for me, like, there was obviously numerous times where, not obviously, but there was numerous times where I tried to take my own life. And what bothers me about that, and the amount of people that do actually have suicidal ideations, is that if I'd been successful, I would have only have known the pain of existence. All I would have known is being an alcoholic who hated themselves, who thought that the world was just not for them. But now, coming out the other side, I'm so grateful every single day. Like, just the little things, like when a stranger smiles at you, when you see a video of a funny dog on the internet, when you watch those videos of soldiers coming home, when I look at my own life and all the joy I've had, like recording the album, like with so many funny, amazing Irish musicians, with a producer that I love to pieces. All of those things I never would have got to experience. So it's like, you just want to give that knowledge to somebody who's in it. You know, you just want to be like, I swear to God, it gets so much better. It really does. Like, I'm just every day blessed that I sucked at that, that I failed. I've never been so happy to fail in my whole life. Like, but I am. And every single day really is a blessing. Like, I know it sounds so cheesy, but like, as somebody who's really been through it, like, even a bad day these days is nowhere near what my bad days used to be like. And I don't know, waking up every day just being like, oh my God, for some reason I'm somehow still doing music. Like, this is my job. Like, it gives me a purpose, and like, I think that's why I love what I do so much. Like, I have goals and things to work towards. Like,
I would suggest that there are three good things happening here, Janet. The first one is you're alive. The second is that you're feeling bright. And the third, of course, is that you're still doing the job that you love, which is a blessing for all of us, of course. Was there a moment in this darkness, and it sounds like the darkness was a long, pervading time in your life, was there a moment where you did have a corner to turn and you felt, I have to do this now, I have to get out of this? Or was it somebody or something or a conversation or a trigger point which snapped you out of it or just brought you slightly towards a happier time?
I remember my mum having to fly over to England after I went missing for like a few days again because of drink. And she took me to the doctors. The doctor recommended me to go to like this drugs and alcohol center that I'd already been to. And I'd already done a program and it hadn't worked. But anyway, I was like, right, fine. My mummy's here. I'll do what my mummy says and I'll go. And then the woman was like, oh, we don't actually have any spaces left, but I'll put you on the waiting list and all the rest. The best blessing ever, though. She was like, in the meantime, here's like some meetings locally for AA. Okay. And I had been to somebody before and they said, oh, don't go to AA. It's just a room full of relapsers and blah, blah, blah. So I never went. And I said that to her. I was like, I was told this, like, it's like a room full of relapsers and there's no point in going. And she's like, whoever told you that? Just like remove that from your memory and just go. So a few days later I went, and then I still stand by it. It was like the first day of the rest of my life going in there and just relating to people, not feeling alone. Their stories resonated with me, and it was like a woman's meeting. And look, I just like sat in this room at 10 o'clock on a Sunday with all these women who looked amazing, were successful, were owning life. And they were laughing at their pain. And I was like, no, this I can get on board with. I want whatever you've got. That's exactly what I want. So that for me was the start of me starting to get better.
So, I mean, it sounds like the key take home, because, of course, you had these preconceptions that AA wouldn't be right because of what you had filtered through to you. But it sounds to me like the take home to anyone that's going through any sort of challenge. And, of course, you've had the extreme versions, but there are plenty of people out there, and we all live our own truths, don't we? There are plenty of people out there that are just feeling low for reasons they maybe can't put their fingers on. And the message, I guess, from your experience is, whatever you do, however you're feeling, remember there's another day and start talking to people.
Literally, talking to people is the biggest part of it. And I think a lot of times when we act out on whatever, usually tends to be this like inability to just be with ourselves. So I feel like isolation's bringing that up for a lot of people, like, because they are on their own, they're with their own company for so long that it's like, if you don't like being alone right now, you're in bad company and you need to reach out and you need to talk, and you, like, it's a hard time. So it's okay to be struggling, and it's okay to struggle whenever this is all over and life goes back to normal. If you don't talk about it, the only person you're hurting is yourself. You're putting yourself in unnecessary pain. And I don't want to sound like a preacher. It's just like, it's just something I've learned. Like, for me personally, I have to go to therapy because I feel like I need to pay someone to listen to my bull crap. You know, I'm like, I have a lot of stuff going on. I don't want to just offload to my friends all the time. Whereas, like, he has to listen to me because I'm paying him. Do you know?
Yeah. Yes, I do. Although I just want to say, Janet, you can always call me. Listen, I think it's quite important for anyone listening thinking, well, hang on, you know, who do I talk to? Where do I start? I just want to give out the Samaritan's number because I think that's, you know, a point of call that anyone should make, however they're feeling, if they just think, you know, maybe I should talk to someone. The Samaritan's number is 116123. That's 116123. Janet, I'm certainly not trying to trivialise anything you've been through, but, you know, hearing you talk, it sort of makes me feel, you know, you need to get this down in a book. Well, you have, rather conveniently. And this isn't me moving the conversation on to talk product, by the way. It's just the fact is that, you know, anybody that's just tuned in and kind of hearing the tail end of what you're saying and thinking, goodness me, this young lady has lived a life in the last 9-10 years. How has she managed it? You unpack all of this in a new book, don't you?
Yeah, so I talk about all of the things in the book, all of the everything I've been through. Like, it's not all negative. There is some happy stuff in there. But realistically, yeah, it's I know people are going to think, like, she's 25, why is she writing an autobiography? But it's not so much an autobiography because it doesn't really go from, like, I was born to where I am now. You know, it's more specifically on these topics. There's around 3 stories for each topic and how I got out of it. And like, I obviously did the book for a selfish reason. I just wanted to get the stuff off my chest, have it down on paper so it, like, has no more ownership of me.
Absolutely. Well, it helped you and now it's helping them. And if anyone's familiar with your songs, you know, you're a fabulous lyricist. I love your way with words. So if the book echoes the songs and the style that you write in, then I imagine it's extremely raw and also very poetic.
It's a very raw book. Yeah. Like, I feel like obviously that word can be a bit overused, but it's the word that people keep saying. So I'm like, well, it must be that then. It must be raw. Because I wasn't trying to hide anything. Like, the amount of times my editor would call me and be like, are you sure you want to put that in the book? Like, you're aware people are going to read this? And I'm like, yeah. The fact that you're saying that makes me know that that story has to be in the book, actually. But lyrically on the album, I wanted to ensure that it wasn't too self-indulgent. So the whole thing is bathed in metaphor. So you might think it might be a song about an eating disorder, but it sounds like a bad breakup song, because I still wanted people to have the freedom to do what music is brilliant for. And that's, like, interpret it to your own life, you know? So I still didn't want to lose that magic of music. And that's why I did the book, so that people could get to know what actually happened, or they could just listen to this as a piece of music and enjoy it.
The album is called Confessional. I had it on in the car on the way here. I'd made the mistake, perhaps, of reading a little review just before I put it on. And the review said that it's music that wears its heart and its scars on its sleeve, which actually was a very good way of putting it. Because then, there I am driving, stuck in traffic, and I've got tears coming down my face because I realised the journey that you've been on, you know, and I knew what we're going to be talking about. And it was like, oh my goodness, it's all there. I mean, it's really powerful stuff, Janet. You know, you've really let the world in, haven't you?
Yeah, but it's because I don't mind oversharing. Like, oversharing is my brand, you know, and I don't mind. It doesn't negatively impact me to be honest and vulnerable. In fact, I enjoy being honest and vulnerable, and the fact that I can get it across in my music, it makes me happy. Like, I think that's because I like that kind of music. So the fact that, you know, some people listen to the album and cry, I'm like, yeah, feel those feelings.
I'll take that as a win. Boom. We did it. Although, I mean, it is, again, it's really important to talk about the journey, and it's, I don't want to say it's conclusion because, of course, you know, we're all learning and we wake up one morning and we feel something and then, you know, we'll end the day feeling differently. But let's just talk about the title of the last track on the album. It's called Better Now. That's the last song on the album. Now, you kind of looked at me there. You pulled a face, which obviously the listeners can't see, but you pulled a face as if that's a bit cringe. But no,
it's because it's the song that gets misinterpreted.
Okay.
So I wanted originally to end the album on Holy Water, which is this up and clappy, happy-go-lucky, like, I'm better, life's good, amazing. Yeah, I'm doing all this. I've let go of my demons. And then Better Now is supposed to sound like, it's actually ironic. It was because I was working really hard at my recovery and all of these things. And on the outside, everybody looking in was like, oh, she's doing so good. She's doing so well. And I realized that I was actually like gripping my well-being with my fingernails. And I actually wasn't better. And I ended up relapsing and going to rehab. So like the lyrics in that song are actually just like, oh yeah, look how better I am.
Driven with Andy J.
If you want to hear Janet Devlin's full album Confessional, it's out for download now. However, I just want to say, if you are affected by what you've just heard, please do contact the Samaritans on 116123. That number again, 116123. Now, after the break, I'm joined by actor Emmett Scanlon on his new drama, The Deceived, that you can see every day next week on Channel 5.
Driven with Andy J.
Welcome back to Driven here on Talk Radio with me, Andy J. Now, I am thrilled to be able to welcome my next guest, a man who, I'm going to put it kindly, is feeling a little sleep deprived. He's a superstar actor. He's been in a litany of wonderful shows. He's here to talk to us about The Deceived, but we've got plenty more things to discuss as well. I also have to bring up Guardians of the Galaxy, obviously, because it's awesome. It's the wonderful Mr. Emmett Scanlon. How are you doing?
Thanks very much for having me, Andy. And yeah, I am quite sleep deprived. Yes, I'm just glad it's not TV because I got a face like wet bread at the moment. I'm not joking about it. We just had a son. He's 2 weeks old and he's an absolute angel. He's a dude. But it does mean that any little noises he makes, I'm up straight away feeding him and changing him and, along with my wife. So.
I'm super impressed that you have dived right back in with full-time nighttime dad duties, Emmett. That is skills.
It's like a bike, though. You never forget. Like, and my daughter is turning 18 next month. God knows where those years went. and now we're starting again.
So look, I'm a dad myself, Emmett, and I've got to ask you. I've got two boys. Now, okay. Their age gap is not 18 years, or give or take.
No.
Yours is. Now, so was Ocean planned, or was Ocean one of those welcome, joyful, oh my goodness, we're going again?
Ocean was planned.
Brilliant.
My wonderful, beautiful daughter of 18 years ago wasn't planned, and probably the best unplanned thing I've ever done. But yes, Ocean was planned. And funny enough, I know we're on radio to talk about The Deceived, but he was conceived on The Deceived. So
brilliant.
We were the fact that it rhymes is pure coincidence. We were in Belfast, myself and my wife came over, and then you don't need to know the rest of it. Time is it now anyway?
I can join the dots. I know what happens. And babies were made.
And before we know it, Ocean Torn Scanlon is born. Torn is Gaelic for chief or chieftain.
Oh.
Double barrel name, so he's got a lot to live up to.
That's,
he's already, mate, he's like, I don't want to bore your listeners, but he's like 2 weeks old now. He's making the most incredible of noises. I cannot stop kissing him. It's borderline child abuse at this stage. And he's already way cooler than I will ever be at 2 weeks old.
Oh, of course. Your kids always have to be cooler than you, however old they are. I mean, Emmett, have you found that you've had that? Because certainly when my first was born, it was unbelievable. I was blown away. I became a completely different person. I was crying at adverts. I was so emotional. And I thought, it can't be as intense second time around. And it was. You've obviously got this 18-year gap. Have you found that you've almost got that explosion of crazy love all over again?
All over again. I mean, there's no, and I have to say that the pregnancy itself, when we went into hospital, we were looked after by Arrow Park. It was a 40-hour labour, and it was an emergency C-section. So the whole thing was absolutely just this. I can't even put it into words. But when we saw Ocean and we heard him cry for the first time, I started crying myself. Yeah. But it wasn't like, I don't cry, but it was like a child's cry. Like I was sobbing. But it was just, and immediately I'm just looking at him going, I love you more than anything. It's unbelievable. I'll do anything for you right now.
Yeah.
So it is. It never stops.
Emmett, I could talk to you all day about fatherhood and the joys of being a new dad. I can feel just how kind of overwhelming and glorious it is for you right now. And in a way, I'll share a story with you in a moment. But I'm guessing, even though you're very happy to be talking here and you've got the new show out next week, which we of course will discuss, I'm guessing part of you is feeling almost a little bit guilty for now talking work for a little while. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, honestly, mate, I'm just trying to pull it all together and try and make words and connect them together to make coherent sentences for you for this. And honestly, I've got my cup of coffee here. It's strong, and I'm willing to talk about work.
We're dispelling a few myths about Emmett Scanlon. You know, you're not the character you're portraying. You know, this is you're establishing just that you really are a high quality actor, Emmett, because we've seen you in many shows, and in a lot of them, you're not the most likable person on the planet. We're obviously referring in a big way to Brendan from Hollyoaks. We can come back to that shortly. Now, we're going to play a clip from The Deceived at the end of our chat, so don't worry. I guarantee we'll probably get it out there. But I've got a question for you, right? So Deceived is playing on Everyday Channel 5 next week at 9 o'clock. Brilliant. Really looking forward to it. It's exactly the sort of show that I'm going to love. I'll read a little brief that I've heard that really captured me in. A sinister narrative of lust, manipulation and betrayal. Ooh, yeah. I like the sound of that.
Yeah. What a job, eh?
and you were the first person to call. Now, I'm asking this question mindful that you are in the sleep-deprived, new dad, second time round vibe right now. There's a sentence that goes with you for this show, but it also carries around with you. And I want to ask you about if it comes with a certain degree of pressure on your behalf. And that is, it's the note in the words that I've been given, and I've actually seen this about you a few times. You are described as timelessly attractive and charismatic.
That's unbelievable.
What does that do to you as a man when you see that's how you're being portrayed? Timelessly attractive. Does that mean you're staying handsome as you get older?
We could do a FaceTime right now. We could do a FaceTime right now, and you would go like, "No way." I mean, my face right now is the face of horror. That's what that's built of. It's either horror or comedy. There ain't no timelessly attractive about this. It's like a fucking melted Barbie doll right now. You do not want to see this. I find it very weird that someone would say that. And whoever said that is an exceptional liar.
No, they're just a really big fan, Emmett. And I need to warn you. Now that you're on your second, I need to warn you. So I also felt that after my first, my face was okay. After my second, my face became a smashed up old teabag and there's no going back. It's the damage is done for life now.
You know what it is? And I said this to my wife one day in the past, and God knows what it is. But you wake up, you get out of bed, and I'm walking down the hallway to the kitchen to make myself coffee, and I can feel my skin on my face. I can feel the bag, like, underneath my eyes. When I move my eyeballs, I can feel it move with me, and that never used to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm 41, I'm not old, but I'm definitely not timelessly attractive, but whoever said that, I mean, remarkable taste, obviously.
It just means we need to work harder at the charisma. There you go, you know.
Exactly.
Exactly. <the seesaw>.
Yeah.
Well, just, I mean, this might not happen to you, Emmett, but certainly I'm now a proud owner of a full-blown dad bod. You know, it doesn't matter how much I train or swim exercise or whatever.
Yeah, mate.
The dad bod's here to stay, and I've just got to own it.
Yeah, 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 100%. It's really, really difficult to get rid of it. And, you know, sometimes when you're gorging on a box of chocolates, or in my case, gin and tonic, you just can't help it. But I do, I will say this, even though I teeter on the edge of dad bod to, oh my God, look, there's a one pack. There's something going on there. There's like... I have a job. I booked a job over this crazy time, lockdown, which I'm really excited about. And that is that filming in a few months. And that requires me to not have a dad bod.
Oh, no.
So training for that started intensely yesterday.
Oh, no. Oh, yes. I feel your
and
pain.
I've got about 8 weeks to do it. 8 weeks to do it. Unbelievable.
Oh, I mean, you know, you'll enjoy the before and afters, though, I guess. There's that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Certainly the afters, yeah. Body memory. I was just like, I'll have one donut and the stomach will just pop out. I was like, brilliant.
Do you know what, Emmett, I was going to be chatting to you about so many quite deep and meaningful things about playing nasty characters.
No, forget about it. Scrap.
This is so much better. I'm so much so much happier we're talking about
this. There's no script. We've gone off filter, you know. Hey guys, I hope you're listening. Channel 5, August 3rd, this Eve, just tune in. Now, back to babies and dad bods.
Exactly. Babies and dad bods is our new truth. It's all gravy. However, your pre-second baby, pre-dad bod, you were in The Deceived. You have recorded it. It's not a live show. That's the good news. Can you imagine if they dropped that one on you now? Emmett, we've had a bit of a problem with all the episodes. We're going to need to do it all live. Emmett, I guess we should probably conclude with something about The Deceived. Sell it to me in one sentence.
What do you mean? One sentence?
Yeah,
go watch on. The Deceived. It'll be great. You know what I mean? It's like a psychological thriller that you don't want to miss. The Andy J Podcast.
The Andy J Podcast. Oh, well. How's about that? Four huge and wonderful stars, each bringing a whole different sort of conversation to the table. A real mixed bag today, wasn't it? I really enjoyed it. Emmett Scanlon, Robert Sheehan, Janet Devlin, of course, and Tom Hopper. Ah, such a lovely group of people with such fascinating and different outlooks on life and so many different journeys to experience. I really hope you found today's episode rewarding, interesting, dynamic, fascinating, and potentially helpful. This is the Andy J Podcast. We do this week in, week out. Thank you very much for your company. It means the world to me. I'd love it if you could subscribe, if you don't, so that you know every week when a new episode lands. I'd love it if you could tell your friends. And if you'd like to say something nice, that would be wonderful. You can follow me at andy.j on Instagram. I don't really do Twitter. I am on there, very much in the background, just as at Andy J, J-E-Y-E. I don't really do it, but I do look from time to time. Insta's my thing. Anyway, thank you so much for your company. Thank you for your time. And let's keep on keeping on, shall we? See you next week. The Andy J Podcast. The Andy J
Podcast. Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.